Okay, we're starting here at the top of Tzadik Ted Amud Aleph. The Gemara about 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down. Amar Rabbi Benai, Amar Shmuel Kruvim Bnei Sayin Omdim. The Kruvim themselves, meaning the bodies of the Kruvim, were Omid Bnei. Shinemar, the Gemara now quotes a pasuk from Melachim Aleph when Shlomo Melech created or made the Kruvim. Now, one important factor is that the Kruvim of Shlomo are not the same Kruvim of Moshe. Moshe's Kruvim stood or were part of the Kaporet, part of the cover to the Aron. They were a single molded piece of gold that was on top of the Aron. On the other hand, the Kruvim of Shlomo Melech stood on the ground and had wingspans that went across the whole bayit. They were also made from wood and covered and plated with gold. I'll read you the psukim from Melachim Aleph with regards to the making of the kruvim. It says, "Vayas bedvir shnei kruvim atzei shemen." They were made out of olive wood. Eser amot komato. They were 10 amot high. So that's what we did in yesterday's daf about the height of being 10 amot high, and therefore the space above them to the top or to the ceiling was 20 amot. V'chamesh amot knafa kruve echat. 5 amot was the span of one of the wings. V'chamesh amot knafa kruve shenit. And the second wing was 5 amot. It doesn't mean that the second kruv had a wingspan of 5, because in a second you're going to see that we have the other kruv described. So eser amot miktzot knafav ve miktzot knafav. From one end of the wing to the other end of the wing, meaning the entirety of the wingspan was 10 amot. Ve'eser ba'ma kruv asheni. And here is the second kruv, also had 10 amot of a wingspan. Midah achat v'ketzev echad ashnei kruvim. They were identical kruvim. Komata kruv echad eser ba'ma v'chein kruv asheni. Their height was 10 amot, as we discussed before. Ve'iten et ha'kruvim betoch ha'bayit ha'pnimi. Shlomo HaMelech put them inside of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Ve'yifrisu et kanfei ha'kruvim. Now the wings were the span of the wings, they were spread. Vatika knafa echad bakir. One wing touched the wall. Uknafa kruv sheni nogat bakir sheni. And the other kruv, the second kruv, had its wing touching the opposite wall. Vid kanfeya no tocha bayit. And then their wings moved towards the center of the bayit. Nogot knaf el knaf. And they met in the middle. And that's because the span of the Kodesh HaKodeshim was 20 amot. So if you take two kruvim who have a wingspan of 10 amot each, then the wing of one would touch one wall, the wing of the other would touch the, of the opposite side would touch the other wall, and their two wings would meet in the middle. And then he coated the kruvim with gold. The problem, obviously, is that here we're talking simply about the wingspan of the kruvim. What about their bodies? Meaning that if the Kodesh HaKodeshim is 20 amot wide, and their wingspan covers the entirety of that 20 amot, 10 amot for each of the two kruvim, then at this point, where's the goof? Where is the body of the kruvim? So that's the statement of Rav Naim Shmuel. Kruvim b'nei sein omdim. They stood by a miracle. Shenemar v'chamesh amot knafa kruve echad, v'chamesh amot knafa kruve shenit, eser amot miktzot knafa v'yaksot knav. Where was their body standing? So it must be the conclusion that their bodies took up no space. Similar, and the reason the Gemara is here is because of what we just said before, that the Aron itself took up no space, and that was the Nes Haya Omed, that the Aron itself was the Nes Haya Omed and took up no space within the Kodesh HaKodoshim. So now Rav Naya Mishmul expands that to include the Kruvim themselves. The bodies of the Kruvim also took up no space. So now there's going to be a series of questions from Omer Rayim challenging this conclusion. Matifla Abaye says, wait a minute. V'dilma botim kitana galim avu kaime. First of all, your assumption, or the underlying assumption of your question, is that the bodies sit between the two wings, equivalent to the arms of a person. A person has two arms that extend from their body. So if you went from one end of one arm to the other, I mean their arm span, you would also have to include the width of their body. But that doesn't have to be true. They could have wings like a tarnagol, like a chicken. Meaning that the body of a chicken sits below the wings. The wings actually come out of the back of the chicken, and from a center point out of the back of the chicken. If that's the case, there's actually no space between the wingspan. There is, right, they are above the body, and the body is irrelevant to the wingspan. So we could suggest that as being the solution here, and therefore you would not have to conclude that the kruvim were omeid b'neis. So now, matav kla rovo. Rava challenges from another possible solution. The Mazesh Loken Negadzeavu Kaime. Who says that the Kruvim were standing parallel? Meaning, who says that they have to be right next to each other, parallel across? Maybe one was pressed in front of the other, and one behind the other, slightly. So therefore, when it came to the space that the body took up, so yes, their wingspan was 10 amot each. Plus you have their bodies, whatever that took up. So that extra amount that the bodies took up, they would have their wings would cross over each other, but one in front of the other. That's a possibility. Has another challenge. Who says that the kruvim were standing either vertically or horizontally, I mean width or length of the Kodesh HaKodeshim? Maybe they were across the diagonal of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. I mean, if the Kodesh HaKodeshim is 20 by 20, then if you take the diagonal, then you have even a larger space to use. If that's the case, then you have plenty of room for the wings and the bodies. And we can explain the way they faced. You could just, their heads could be shifted slightly. I mean, that they don't have to face the same way their bodies are facing. And we're going to see that in a second in the Gemara. There's such a solution that their heads were not facing the same direction as the bodies, but slightly turned to the side. Another challenge. Who says that the measurement of 20 by 20 for the Kodesh HaKodashim, which is the floor plan of the Kodesh HaKodashim, that was 20 by 20, who says as you rise on the walls that this same distance is true? Who says that it's 20 by 20 as you rise up? Why? Because we know that as walls rise from the base is thicker, and they narrow as they get higher. So maybe the space above, now these kruvim stood 10 amot high, so at a point where their wingspan was, maybe there was more space. It wasn't simply 20 amot, there was more space, and they could have fit their kruvim in there. It's a matter of the Rav Papa. So Rav Papa said, "Well, demo mikaf kavu kaife yadayu." Israel, your underlying assumption is that each wing is 5 amot. So fine, but who says that their wings were extended fully? Maybe their wings were curved. If their wings are curved, or like a person's arm would be, not extended fully, but slightly bent, that's the case. Even though they are 5 amot, the wings, they still don't have to take up 5 amot of space across the Kodesh HaKodashim. And again, that would leave space for the body. Maybe the possibility here is that their wings are overlapping. Maybe that they are hugging or crossed over somehow like the like two people would hug. But the wings of the kruvim, who says that when it says nogat kanaf meknaf, that their wings touched, doesn't mean that just the tips touched. Maybe they overlap somehow, or they touch somehow with a, not just by touching the tip, but overlapping. If that's the case, you also have more space, and you can include, again, you can include in that the bodies, and you wouldn't have to say b'nei sayom dim. Because of all these challenges, the Amorayim are not willing to accept this position of Naim Rishmol, that the kruvim b'nei sayom dim. Now, ketzad henom dim. When the kruvim are placed there, how are they standing? Not how are they standing, meaning how are they laid out in the Kodesh HaKodashim, but rather they're facing. How are they facing? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, it's machlokas. Chadamar pneim ish el achiv. One of them says that their faces face towards each other. Chadamar pneim lebayit. One of them says that their faces face the dvir, the Kodesh HaKodashim, towards the same way that the Beit HaMikdash was. Ulamanda amar pneim ish el achiv. The one who says that they faced each other, haktiv upneim lebayit. The problem is that the pasuk in Divrei Yamim, which is describing the kruvim of Shlomo Melech, in that pasuk, it tells us that the kruvim were keneged or facing to keneged abayit, because it says there. So Yud Gimel, kanfei kruvim ha'ele porsim amot esrim, as we discussed before, that they have 20 amot of span between the two sets of kruvim. Ve'imudim al regleihem, they're standing on their feet. Upnehem labayit, and they faced towards the bayit meaning the mikdash itself. So what is he going to do with the fact that it says upnehem el habayit? Now, by the kruvim ha'moshe, it sounds like, and we're going to see this in a second, it's quoted from the in Shmot, it says pneim ish el achiv. So each opinion believes that whatever the kruvim are, whether the ones on top of the aron and the kaporet, or the ones that are standing that Shlomo made, they should face the same direction. There shouldn't be a difference between them. So according to the one who says that pneim ish el achiv, that they faced each other, then what does he do with the pasuk in Divrei Yamim that describes those of Shlomo Melech pneim el habayit, that they're facing towards the mikdash itself? So how does he reconcile? Lokasha, kam bezman shisol sim ratzono shel makom, kam bezman shenisol sim ratzono shel makom. That the chatchila, the kruvim are made facing one another. Why? That's to show their chiba of love. So when they're made to have the hashrat hashchina, they're done in a way that shows the ahava, which is that they're facing each other. But at times when Bnei Yisrael don't do exactly what they're supposed to do, they turn away from each other to indicate that there's been some sort of pirud, some sort of distancing between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they turn away. So that is a ma'asin nisim, that the heads will face each other when Bnei Yisrael sim ratzono shel makom, and they will face away when they don't. So solution to the different psukim, the one found in Shmot and the one found in Divrei Yamim, is to do with different times, different behavior of Klal Yisrael. The one who says that he takes literally the pasuk in Divrei Yamim that they face towards the Mikdash, then what does he do? Aktiv, what does he do with the pasuk in Shmot, Bnei Mishal Achiv, that they faced each other, Kruvim, that they were slightly angled. They were angled, meaning they were angled towards each other, but also towards the Bayit. Detanyo, we have a brisa, unklus ageramar kuvim. So again, this is quoting from Divrei Hayamim, that the pasuk says in Divrei Hayamim, in pasuk Yud, about the kuvim, that those kuvim that were formed by Shlomo HaMelech, v'yazveit tekodesh ha-kodeshim kuvim shnayim masei tzatzuim. V'yitzapu otom zav. He made them masei tzatzuim. So what is this masei tzatzuim, eh? So tzatzuim, unklus is metargim, that they are kruvaya, which are mean children, young children. So they're like young children who are leaving their Rebbe. So when they're leaving their Rebbe, they slightly turn their face back to their Rebbe when they're leaving, but not all the way. So the same thing over here, the kruvim, to accomplish the both psukim, they both face the bayit, but also face each other. So therefore we are, in that manner, upholding the pasuk in Shmot that says Pneim Yishal Achiv, and we're also upholding the pasuk in Divrei Yamim that says Pneim El Habayit, that they were slightly angled or turned to that side. The Tosfos and the Rashbam point out over here that they couldn't answer up that Bizman Shosim Etzono Shel Makom as an answer here, because if that's the case, then when they start the Chatchila, you should always make it that they're facing towards each other to indicate the Avod. That's what you do the Chatchila. Why would the Chatchili make him Pneim El Habayit, and then at Studeh Mitzdadeh, or that they would turn towards each other when they're doing Ritzono Shel Makom? Doesn't make sense that you would start with Pneim El Habayit. Therefore, the Gemara here has to answer differently and say that Pneim El Habayit is that that was the direction of their heads and their neck and their body, but their heads were slightly turned towards each other, the same way that children when they're leaving their Rebbe. Okay, now we have a Mishnah. Mishesh lo bor lifnim mibeito shel chavero, someone who has a bor inside of his friend's house. I mean, either they divided the property this way or he purchased it from him. Nichnas b'sher shederech ben adam nichnasim. He can go in there to get his water when it's normal for people to enter and exit the house. V'yotzei b'sher shederech ben adam yotzim. I mean, during daylight hours. V'enu machnis b'hemto umashkeh miboro. You don't bring your animal in to feed from the bor. Ela memalei umashkeh mibachutz. You fill up the water and you take it out. That's an unreasonable assumption. What the person sold you was the bor, the use of the water, and then access to the water. So you have access, you can come in wherever you want, take it, and then take it out to feed the behemah. But you may not bring the behemah into the house. Each one has a lock. I mean, both the owner of the house and the owner of the boar have a lock, which the Gemara will discuss. Where are these locks? So the Gemara says, who is this, where is this lock sitting? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Shneim Labor. Both of them a lock on the well itself, on the boar, or the cistern that has the water in it. Both of them have a lock, independently, to be opened. Bishlamo bala boar by lishtimure maya deborit. Okay, it makes sense that the owner of the boar has a lock on it, so that the balabait or his family don't go in and take water whenever they want. It's his water, so he wants to protect it. Ela balabait lamalait. Why does the balabait need to have a lock on the boar? He can't, the other individual can't get into the house without his permission. So Amar Lazar, the issue is, mishum, chashto. We have a problem of mishum chashad ishto, that we worry about his wife. Now why? Because generally, there's no problem of yichud when it comes to balabayir, when the husband is in the city. Why? Because if the husband comes back, the wife is always in a, or the parties are always in a state of fear that the husband might walk in, and that fear prevents anything from happening. Now the problem is, if the boar is left open, then this individual has an excuse to be in the house. So if he has an excuse to be in the house, he's going to lose some of that factor, the fear factor of the husband being around. So if he can enter any time and leave any time he wants because he can go and access his boar, then we're afraid that the mitigating factor of Bala Bayir will not help here if his wife's in the house. So what do? We say that the husband has to lock the boar. Now, if the individual is found in the house, we say, oh, wait a minute, what are you doing in here? You can't get in without me. If you can't get without me, what are you doing inside my house? So again, then we've rekindled the fear of Bala Bayir, and we don't have to worry. What about Gneva, that this person can come in the house and take things because he'll say, oh, I was coming to get my boar to see if you're there. So the answer to that is that his wife is there, and she'll prevent him from walking off with items from the house. She'll prevent the Gneva. The problem with Chashad Ishto, we just make sure by keeping him locked out that he has no excuse to be in the house without the Baal's permission, without the Baal knowing. And if that's the case, then we have a protection against Chashad Ishto. Okay, next Mishnah. Mishi Ishto Gina, Lifnimi Gina Tosho Chavero. A person has a garden inside of his friend's garden. Again, it's a case either where they split the property this way, or a person purchased a Gina and he has a path. He was entitled to a derech, a access route through the other individual's garden to get there. He can go in when normally people go in and when normally people go out. That's the, his rights, the access rights that are granted him, are to act in a normal manner. If he wants to sell his vegetables or what he's growing in his garden, he has to remove them from the garden, take them out, and sell them outside. He can't bring the merchants or the buyers into his garden to take them out, because that's not what the granted the access rights were. The access rights were simply so he could take care of his garden, not so that he can all of a sudden bring in buyers and other surveyors. He also may not use this as a shortcut to access other properties, meaning that the access rights to the seder are simply for this gina, or for to ensure that he can take care properly of the area that he has planted, not to grant him access rights to go through to somewhere else. It's not a free for all. Why? So the Rashbam says, we see by the fact that this path that he has to grant them is in the middle of a field somewhere out on Saturday, that he did it against his will. He had to grant him access rights, otherwise the individual couldn't get through. So since he did it against his will, we're going to minimize what's given to the buyer or to the person who has these access rights here. And the minimal amount is that, number one, he can only go in for the purpose of that tzedek, not for anything else. He can't bring other people in there. And he also has to do it at normal hours. V'chitzon, and because of that, zareya tederech. And so the outer party, or the party who owns the land where the path is going through, he can plant it. Now the other, the individuals on the inside can walk over his vegetation without any problem and stomp on it or whatever he needs to do to get through. But the outer party has the right to plant it. Now, if they both agree, meaning that they agreed to have the path be on the side of his field, not through the right through the middle of his field, then nichnas b'shashu rotzeh, v'yotzeh b'shashu rotzeh. Because once he's given him rights on the side of the field, that's something that does not interfere with his normal planting with his gina. When it's in the middle of the gina, then we say that he limits anan sade, that he gives the minimum amount. Then when he gives on the side, where it's anan sade the other way, that he was mochel, and he says, whatever you need to use this path for, it's fine, because it's not interfering with my usage in my field. So if that's the case, you can go in and out when you want. Umachnisa tochat agreen, you can bring your buyers and sellers through this path into your own field, because again, it won't interfere. V'lo yikanes mitochal utofs de'acher. On the other hand, he still may not use this as a shortcut to enter into another field. Again, the access rights that were granted over here were simply for this field. They're not for other fields. I mean, you can do as much as you need for this field in an expansive sense, but not to use it as access rights to another place. Neither party can plant the area. Again, the buyer cannot, or the person who owns the inner field cannot plant it, because he only is granted access rights to walk through, not to plant it. On the other hand, the seller or the owner of the outer field is also not the one who's going to plant it, because he was mochel. We said that he was more gracious in his granting of rights here, so we don't let him plant it because it's on the side. But nevertheless, right, he has a right to stop him from using it as a shortcut through to other properties. Some review the Amar Shmuel, so they're going to be examples of other types of property. Ama Beit HaShlachim, if a waterway or a water channel that brings water into a field that needs to be irrigated, Animor Chalacha, he says, I'm selling you a water channel. So now it's going through his field, and he's selling the water channel that goes through the field. So then there's actually Machlokas of the Girsaot here, exactly what it says, either Notendo Beit Damot Letocha, and if you argue, it says, Amal Kan V'Amal Kan, that he actually, the water channel actually has to be 2 amot wide, and if it's not 2 amot wide, he widens it out, plus he gets an Amal on each side on the bank, on each side, lagfei, to hold up the bank and to ensure that the bank, the embankments that hold the, allow the water channel to go through are solid and they're not worked or walked on, so they, or built on. So therefore he gets 2 in the middle plus an am on each side. The Rashbam quotes from the Rabbeinu Yaakov Bar Yakar, and he says he thinks this is the proper explanation over here, is that Amma Beit HaShlachim is noten lo shtei amot l'tocha shel sedeh l'taken agfei amma mikan amma mikan. That we're actually talking about the same shtei amot. When he says he gets 2 amot, it's not talking about the channel itself. It's talking about you get 2 amot, 1 amma on each side of the bank. Meaning that it's not 4 amot that he's granting him, 2 through the middle plus 1 on each side, but rather the amma is known as an amma because it's an amma wide. The channel is an amma wide. And you get an amma on each of the embankments, which actually will be 3 amot wide. Tosfos clearly clarifies, well, if you think that it's 2 amot wide, then why is it called an amma? It's because it's an amma deep. And so you have a machlokas whether you're actually granted over here 3 amot wide or 4 amot wide, and the same machlokas will persist in the next line of the Gemara. Ama Beit HaKilon or Beit HaSilon. This is again a water channel, but not an irrigation channel, but rather water to bring to one's house or to field to feed the animals, to do laundry with. then it's a narrower channel. So in that case, it gets one amma in the middle. One amma through the channel in the middle, plus it gets a half amma on each bank in order to secure the walls of their banks so that the water can flow through. Again, according to the Rav Yaakov Yakar, the way the Rashi explains the Yakar is that this is actually one amma. What the one amma is the half on each side, and then the channel can be much smaller or less wide. And it doesn't give us an exact number of how wide it is, but it'll be less than an amma. So the Gemara says, "Votog fein mizoran." Those two banks that are left for the person who buys a water channel, who can plant them? Yudomar Shmuel balasadisoram. He says that the owner of the field can plant them. Meaning that when he grants them the rights to the embankments, it's to ensure that they are secure and he doesn't build on them, he doesn't ruin them, but not that he won't plant on them. Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel balasadeh not an. That he cannot, can he plant them, but he can only put trees. He can put some trees in there. Mada Amar zor an koshkem not an. The one who says you can plant vegetation there certainly says you can plant trees. Mada Amar not an. The one who says you can plant trees, aval zor an lo, chalchuli mechalchale. But when you can't plant vegetation over there, because the vegetation spreads, and when it spreads out, it's melachlech, it ruins the water, or weakens the dirt there. As opposed to trees, which have deep roots and actually secure the bank by holding the bank together, the trees will hold them together. Although obviously you have the problems of the roots breaking the walls, the Gemara doesn't seem to be so worried about that because it's the channel's not so deep. And so probably the roots reach below the channel and won't be an issue for the channel. Rami Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Amata Mayim Shekalu Akfei. So if the banks, the sides of this channel fall in, that you're allowed to you need dirt now to re-establish or to fix the banks. You're allowed to take that dirt out of the field in which the channel is running through. Why? Because when the bank collapsed inward, the water washed the dirt away. When it washed that dirt away, it piled that dirt back into the same field. The underlying assumption is that when the wall collapses inward, that the water will spread the dirt back into the same field. So when it says, Matkav Lera Papa, Vlemilei, Mayech, Ashpulei, Larech. Why don't we just say that your water is the one that caused the dirt and washed it away? Why would we say that the balasadeh, that the owner of the field is responsible here to give dirt to replace it? It's your water caused the weakness, washed it away. Why should I be responsible? Amra Papa, you have to word it this way. Shemnat King Kibelala balasadeh. That the balasadeh actually accepts responsibility. Part of the sale in these issues is that he accepts responsibility that if the walls collapse inwards, that this individual will come and repair the walls from the dirt that's found in the field. Because where else? He's not going to truck in all of a sudden all these materials to fix it. Rather, he can take from the field itself. He's mishabed this field to do this. So based on that, now we have a conclusion. If you sell a water channel, we have a machlokes about whether that's an amma, for instance, whether it's 3 amot or 4 amot wide. You get the water channel, plus you get the embankments. Well, if you get the right to fix the embankments from the field itself, then why do we have to grant you the embankments in the first place? Well, the answer is because he's not allowed to build a real building. He's not allowed to do anything on the embankment itself. The only thing he can do is maybe plant trees or a little vegetation, depending on the machlokes we have in Shmuel, right, between Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda. But other than that, he's not allowed to do. And if they collapse in, he's meshubad to the field to take care of those embankments. Okay, we'll stop over here.